to Saturday AM Live with Vance Rogers.
First, we're going to talk about 10 top reasons for a home-based business. Take it away, Ron Barnes.
Yep. Okay, thank you, Vance. Just quick intro. My wife and I, Pam and I, are platinum consultants, and we live in Southern Indiana, but right by Louisville, Kentucky. So we're in the Louisville region, and I have over 40 years of experience as a CPA in public accounting. So I've worked with a lot of businesses, big business, little business, mom and pop, sole proprietor, just a wide range. And what I want to talk about today are what I listed as the top 10 advantages of an ECN business, and I'll touch base a little bit on the taxes as well, and make a couple of additional comments. And these are not in a specific order like number 1 to number 10. They're just top 10 that I came up with that I feel like are solid reasons why the ECN business is a home-based business. It just makes a lot of sense. Number one, the cost of entry is only, it's just cheap. It's only $99. And that's basically nothing compared to the hundreds of thousands or even millions that somebody invests in a new business when they have a brick and mortar location. Even a franchise set up, you can get into that for maybe, anywhere from, $20,000 to $200,000, but that's the franchise fee. On top of that, you have investment in the property, the equipment, you've got employees, it just goes on and on. So the cost of entry, is basically nothing, to get in, and I think that's a terrific, point. Number two, you're your own boss. So 100% of the net income goes to you as the business owner. You don't split that with somebody. You don't get a percent. You get 100% of the income that you generate. Your schedule's flexible. You have a custom environment to work in. So basically you're working from home. You lay that out the way you want it. It's your workspace. And that, you know, for everybody that's been in a W-2 position, you know, you don't have that flexibility, and being able to work from home is a great thing. You know, not in your custom environment, but you can wake up and still be in your pajamas and doing ECN. And so, and you can't do that when you're at work. There's no cost or time to commute. You think about the amount of time wherever you live, you know, just the commute time. You easily spend 30 minutes. I know people spend over an hour, just to get to work and then back. With ECN, it's as soon as you sit down at your laptop or you pick up your cell phone, there you go, you're working. More family time. Because you can work from home, you have time to interact with your family and be there. And the little bits of time here and there, it adds up, and it's a big, big plus. And then you save money. We're not spending extra money for lunches as we eat out, on the gas as we commute back and forth to work, on extra, clothes and attire as we go to work. So there's, just being in that mode are all reasons why a home-based business makes sense. Number three, you don't have any of the headaches of a traditional business. And by that I mean you don't have any employees. You don't have any accounts receivable you have to collect. You don't have any production costs. You don't have to figure out how they're going to manufacture this. You don't have to have a development team to come up with a new design or new ways to ship, or you don't have any of those issues. And, you know, it's interesting. One of the things is I work with employers over the years. Often, I would ask the question, what separates them or helps really make their business different from their competitors, and help them think through that? And invariably, the answer to that was our number one thing is, you know, separates us as the employees. They're great. And then I would ask them what their biggest headache, what's the biggest problem they have? Oh, it's no questions, employees. So the same thing that was their number one differentiator was also their biggest headache. With a home-based business, you don't have that. You work for yourself, and you don't have employees. Yeah, we have a team, but it's just that. We're a team. They're not employees. Number four, you develop a residual income stream. Now, that's awesome. When you look at the value of compounding, this residual income stream is something that's a major separator from businesses. You look today with what's going on with the coronavirus and so forth, and look at the box stores and people that are saying, hey, I'm going to stay home and not go shopping, I guess, except for the run on people that are going out buying hand sanitizer and toilet paper. Except for that, there's people are staying home. So just think of all of that. They have all that stuff sitting there, but it's generating zero. So you don't have that. Once we have the residual income stream, people buy auto ship. You know, Pam and I, when we're on a trip to someplace, we have revenue being generated when we're on vacation, whether it's in Canada, whether it's in Florida, wherever we're at. Business is still going on, and that's pretty awesome. Number five.
And I want to reiterate that residual. Dave Stoltz taught me years ago the term reproductive residual income. And when people understand value of duplicating what we're doing, then it's not only a residual income stream, but it's reproductive. And just like a good book, a good movie, a good YouTube video, I wish I knew something about that, but people don't believe us. $1,200 is the last little residual, reproductive. But nobody's going to go out and make another YouTube video for me. Continue on. Number five, Ron. Thank you.
Number five. Yeah, in that residual income, we could spend a whole call on that. That is so powerful and the power of that. And you know, that's just a call by itself. Tailoring funds your own retirement plan. That's number five. You know, one of the things that we want to make sure we do as we generate their income with our business is we set up our retirement plan. We determine how much we want to set aside for our future needs. We're not dependent upon somebody else to do that. We don't have somebody else saying, well, we're going to set this up and we'll contribute X percent to your retirement plan. No, we get to do that ourselves. And that, again, you look at the power of compounding. You start doing that right away, and you develop that as one of those core habits of your business, and in the long term, that's a very, very powerful one. Number six, office and home. You know what I talked about? You have the ability to work from home. You're your own boss. You're going to work right. So you're going to set that up. But that office and home has multiple factors. Number one, it's convenient. You know, it's comfortable. It's your space. But number two in that is you're able to deduct expenses associated with that. You know, and I'm talking about a percent of utilities, your taxes, your homeowner's insurance. If you live in a neighborhood that has the homeowner's association, the fees, repairs, interest, even depreciation, all of that, you take a percent. It's based on the amount of square feet that you use for your business to the total square feet in your home, but there are some key buzzwords, and it has to be used solely and exclusively on a regular and consistent basis. And those are key words in the Internal Revenue Code. So just be really careful. If you're working from your dining room table, that's great that you're operating the business, but I suspect other things go on to dining room table except for Neekin. So just kind of take a look at what you're doing and remember that solely and exclusively on a regular and consistent basis. Number seven.
And Ron, I think the big one before we jump into seven is that as long as you're not excessive, I don't think you could write off 90% of your home as an office. Probably
That'd
not.
That'd be pretty
right?
hard. No. Again, you have to, you know, one of the tax code things that when I give presentations that I always like to share, even one-on-ones, but also when I've presented in seminars, is a major code section. And this one you may want to write down if you've not heard me say this before. If you don't write anything else down, write this down, that pigs get fat and hogs get slaughtered. And so just kind of think about 90% of your home as your office might be in the hog range. And you're probably going to be an instant winner in a tax audit. So just use good judgment. And you know, again, it's pretty easy to measure how many square feet. I will say that I've had people ask about, well, that I'm not going to deduct that because that's a flag for an IRS audit. Truth is, the IRS does look at that. But you have a legitimate business that you operate from home, and you have a space that you work from. And again, it has to be solely for needs, and you got to be set up for that. But, you know, Vance, your point was great. You know, it may be 5%. It might even be 10%. I don't know. But if you have 5%, just capture those expenses. That's a legitimate deduction. And that goes back, Vance, what you were talking about, somebody, you know, that had that self-employed versus getting a W-2. You want to take advantage of the Internal Revenue Code. It's designed to work for the taxpayer, not just against the taxpayer. A lot of people think about, well, it's all the things you can't do. I guarantee you, and I've been through the many sections of that code over the years, it's filled with things you can do. It's not just what you can't do. So think of it in terms of use that for your business. Number seven, deduct expenses associated with your business. Any expense that is necessary or a component of your business should be captured. And this is where you want to capture these things on a contemporaneous basis, meaning do it as that you incur them throughout the year. We don't wait until January. Or here we are in March, and some of you may be there, I don't know. You don't want to wait until March to look back and say, well, I wonder how much money I spent on these expenses for all of 19. Oh my goodness, you're going to try now to go back and reconstruct that. I guarantee you will miss things. But if you do it as the year goes, number one, you have a good handle on how your business is going, and number two, you'll capture everything. I don't believe that when you look at companies that are out there operating, that they wait until the next year to find out what their expenses were for the previous year. They're looking at that as you go. They're looking at it as a business. Some of the expenses you want to look at would be cell phone, internet, your computer. Now, on the cell phone, maybe you didn't have a cell phone before you started with Meekin, and you just have one now, but that's probably not the case for most of us. So when I say cell phone, it's going to be a percentage of your phone. Now, if you want to look at what the guidelines are from the IRS, we're supposed to keep a log of every time we use the phone. And whether it's business or personal, and you take a percentage. I would submit that nobody does that. So then it's good judgment. You know, Vance kind of goes back to points you made before. Just use common sense. And if I use my phone extensively for business, then maybe I take a high percentage, 70 or 80%. If I use it occasionally, then maybe I take 20%, but just, it's not going to be one size fits all. It's going to be how it fits your business. You can't operate Meekin without internet, so you've got some internet costs. Think about all the office supplies you buy, whether it's postage stamps to mail out things, or cards, or stationery where you're sending out flyers, whatever it might be, all of those things you want to capture, your business cards, everything, just any little expense that you buy, or you incur your business, you want to capture all those. Think of all the various books and pamphlets and brochures that we've purchased just to continue to educate ourselves and learn. Those are all great deductions, and they serve as great things. Sometimes we'll get, Pam and I will have copies of books that we give to new consultants that join our team because we want to help encourage and educate and train them. And those books offer some great insight. And so we'll just give them that book. Those are all deductions and we capture all of that. Essentially, it's any expense necessary for you to carry on your business in a normal manner. Number eight, health insurance. There's special treatment for the deduction of health insurance for people that are self-employed. The cost of your health insurance is a deduction from gross income and it's treated differently than it would be as a W-2 employee. And for most of us, thankfully, you don't have enough to exceed the threshold of a tax deduction. And I could get through that whole section of explaining what that means, in the interest of time. The main thing to capture here is you get a special treatment to do that. Now, again, you have to have your business. It's a legitimate business, and you're really working this. You can't just instantly flip a switch and say, okay, I'm going to change everything. I don't mean that, but there is special treatment for that, and we want to capture that. And again, that is part of that code section of what you can do as opposed to cannot. Automobile usage. That's a big one. We all incur that. You know, as we go to events, as we go to see new customers or downline, whatever it might be, you can deduct the cost of using your car, and there's two methods. One is either the standard mileage rate, or the other is the actual expense. And again, there's not a one-size-fits-all to that. The mileage rate for 2019 was 58 cents a mile. For 2020, it drops to 57.5, so it's basically the same. And it's applied to your total business miles. What's required? You have to keep track of your total business miles and your total mileage. So simple thing is just keep a notebook, a pad of paper, whatever. You don't have to buy some big fancy thing. Just keep some mechanism in your car. And when you get ready to leave to go to see this new customer, or you're going to go to an event, write down the odometer reading and the date where you're going. And then when you get back, you put down the ending odometer reading. And at the end of the year, you add up all those miles, and then you know what the total mileage is on the car, and it gives you a percentage. If you take actual expenses, then you apply the percentage of business miles versus total times all the expense. And if you want to use the standard mileage rate, then you just multiply it. And it's interesting, you know, if you're driving a 2004 Honda, your expenses are pretty small, and so that 58 cents looks pretty attractive. If you're driving a 2019 Cadillac Escalade, that's maybe not as fuel efficient as that Honda, it might be to your advantage to go ahead and take actual expense. It just, you know, it depends on where you're at and what business and what vehicle you're driving. And remember, because it's a home-based business, we start at home. We don't have to go to a point and then start counting business miles. Our business mileage starts as soon as we back out of the driveway. Number 10, Ron,
before we you can finish with number 10, if I can interject here one more time on number 9, a simple 12-month calendar. Those little boxes are plenty big to write the mileage for the day. And if you just reset your tripometer, that's what I do, and I've been doing it for years. And if we have multiple vehicles in our family, and if we're driving Stacy's 2019 RAV4, I just reset that tripometer, and I've got a calendar in the side door compartment, and it's really simple. What is our intent? The key word that we've always used, Ron, that's helped us is intention. What is our intention for that journey, for that trip? Okay, if we're taking the kid to the Oregon coast and we've got no customers, I have nothing planned, I'm not going to try and think of something. And if I have a phone conversation with someone in the journey, that doesn't really count because that phone conversation could have happened anywhere. But if I meet up with somebody, or there's a possibility, then I'm going to reset that tripometer, and then we'd meet up with them, and we had a conversation about Nikan. Well, absolutely, because that was a face-to-face interaction. But that 12-month calendar has really made it so easy, because it's not an expense, and you can get them for like $2-3, or even at the dollar store for $1, you know, at Dollar Tree. But that little calendar box is plenty big enough to write the name and then the distance.
It is. You know, Vince, two good points in there that you made. One of them is if somebody has a multiple vehicle family, the mileage rate works out well because it's the same rate regardless of the vehicle you're driving. And so you just need to know the actual miles. Now, there still is a requirement to show the total miles versus business miles because, again, the IRS is trying to look at, or, you know, does this make sense? But you're only applying it to the business portion, and so that really does help. And then the second thing is, what is, and the keywords used in the code, what's the primary purpose or primary reason for the trip? So if you leave home and you're going to go to a local event that you're having at coffee shop or wherever, and so it's a gathering. For example, Pam and I have one, and it's in a small restaurant in Louisville. And as we drive there, we count the mileage to that and the mileage home. We do that once a month. There's a setup routine. Well, if we stop at the grocery and pick up a gallon of milk on the way back, I don't worry about that. But if I'm going to the grocery and that's the primary reason, and oh, by the way, I want to drop off such and such, or somebody calls and says, could you come by? You have to look at, well, my trip, I made that trip for business, or I made that trip for personal. So what was the primary reason?
Ron,
that's the point.
Yeah, let me throw one other example and remind everybody to hit *6 to mute your line if you haven't done that. But I'm leaving here in about an hour and a half or so to go get the oil change done in my wife's car. But here's the catch. That really wouldn't be a business usage at all. But the person that I'm going to encounter at that tire shop where they do oil changes and service our vehicles, his name is Juan. He's one of our customers. My intent, because I can never get Juan on the phone, because he just doesn't answer his phone anymore, my intent is to have a conversation, ask him about how his wrists are doing, because he wears a power band bracelet on either side. Yeah, the oil change is secondary for me. My intent, that's why I chose that place, because I want to have the conversation with Juan. And then we'll come back home. So that whole entire trip for me... Now, if my wife would have done it, she wouldn't converse with Juan. She'd probably talk to Tiffany or Dan, the manager. But I know I'll talk to Juan because I know he's going to be working today. So again, that word intent, that really has saved our bacon many, many, many times. So number 10, Ron. So
you need to document. Yep. No, that's fine. You need to document that. It's hard to prove intent. So the burden of proof is on the taxpayer, not the IRS. So just make the better documentation you keep, the better records, the easier it is to prove intent. And by doing it as you go, doing it in each trip, as opposed to waiting until the end of the year and figuring it out, helps to substantiate your intent. And number 10, travel deductions. You can deduct the cost of travel for business outside your normal area. For example, The last trip Pam and I took was out to the event that Dave Johnson had in Utah, and we went out there, and that was a great event, a lot of good sharing of information, and so we deducted airfare, lodging, and so forth. And you know, while we're out there, I mean, that whole trip, the reason we went was for that conference, but we added a day so that we can enjoy some of the beauty of Salt Lake City and do some things there. That day was on Pam and I. I mean, that part is all us. But the airfare wasn't any different. So the airfare is deductible. That extra night of lodging is personal, but all the other nights were business. So the incidental cost of being able to enjoy some time in Salt Lake City really was cheap. But I get to deduct the primary cost because we went there not to tour Salt Lake City. We went there for the convention. So again, that intent word comes in. But you know, there's humans being more training. It's the any travel that you've got. You got the airfare, lodging, meals. Now it's important to note that you need to keep track of all your expenses, and as part of a good business, you need to have a separate bank account for your business and a separate credit card. And by doing that, that's another indicator of your business intent, but it's also a best and a good way for doing an accounting of looking back and tracking my expense. But you know, when I capture all of those things, I'm going to have my actual cost and I need to write down what I'm doing. But you can use a per diem rate, and that's in the Internal Revenue Code. Now that per diem rate will fluctuate from year to year, based on cost of living indexes and so forth, but it's fairly steady. But that per diem rate, there's a rate that you can apply that's for meals, it's for lodging and meals and incidental expenses. Or you can just use the rate for meals and incidental expenses. And there's a rate for high-cost areas like Washington, D.C., New York City, that kind of thing. And then there's a different rate for areas that are not considered high-cost. Louisville, Kentucky would not be a high-cost region, as an example. So, you know, if I can just take a flat $60 a person per day, when Pam and I make a trip, well, then we have, for meals and incidental expenses, I can do that. But if our costs exceed that, well, then I want to use the actual cost. But you need to be consistent in the trip. I don't flip-flop around, but sometimes the per diem rate's easy. You know, some people find that easier than trying to keep track of everything. They just take a flat rate. But the point is that those travel deductions are there. You can add on the extra time to enjoy. We've done that and many weekend trips. We add on extra time. And again, once we're already there, it's just maybe a couple of nights lodging and a little bit for meal cost, but we're already there. The basic cost incurred. So as you look at your expenses, those are some really big ones, but key is also remember any expense associated with your business, you need to capture that, write it down, and organize that. Just a side note from a tax standpoint, Vance, you know, somebody has assistance in the tax prep. The more organized you can be, have it all recapped. Whether you use an Excel spreadsheet, whether you use QuickBooks, whatever you use, the more organized and summarized you are, the better it is. You do not want to take a tax preparer a box full of paper. That just kind of runs the cost right up because that person's spending time. So you know your business, they don't. So capture all those items, write them down. And again, what I encourage people to do is to every month, close that month out. You know what your NECAN income is going to be. You get the commission check in the middle of the month. You get the retail checks on a weekly basis now. That's awesome. And then you've got, the revenue from, we'll keep, some inventory, maybe a couple pair of shoe inserts, duct tape, CM creams, stuff like that. And so we sell those, then we keep track, we have a receipt book and we document all that. And also don't forget, deducting the cost of your tax prep, that's kind of important. And the mileage to go to your tax preparer, that's a business trip, right? So, I've had people miss that. Trips going to the bank, they miss that. I know we do a lot of stuff now, banking, with our phone, and you can just take a picture and send it in. But if you go to the bank, that for business, that's deductible. Post office, for business, that's deductible. All of those things capture those trips. It's not just a trip of going to see a new customer or a downline. If I'm going to post office to mail invites to an event that we're hosting, that's deductible. Maybe as an accountant, I'm overboard on that, but if you just think about it, what's the primary reason? And am I doing this for business? Well, capture it. You know, we're in business to make a profit. I want to close with that. You notice that on my top 10 advantages, I talked about the positive things, the revenue, the advantages of working from home. We are not in business to generate a loss. We're in business to earn income. And how much you want to earn depends on your personal circumstance and what you want to do. But we want to maximize and capture all the tax deductions we can. But you're not in business to generate a loss. There's no such thing as a 100% tax bracket. So, again, focus on, hey, I'm building a business. The Internal Revenue Code is there to work for me. Capture the key points, capture every expense you're entitled to, and yeah, you may have at the start, particularly, you got some lost years as you build your business up, and you should capture every bit of that. But our goal is to work on the revenue side and share NECAN with other people and grow that business. So, Vance, with that, I'm, I know we're over time, and hopefully we've not lost everybody. So there you go.
Ron, I'm sitting here nodding my head because you finished beautifully with, again, going back to that word intent. Our goal is not to create a hobby here where we just pour money into it and it generates nothing. The goal is, as Luis Kusuga taught us in Layton, Utah, is that I love sales and sales love me. And it's not so much about selling. I tell people when we sit down, hey, keep your wallet in your pocket, leave your checkbook at home. I told that to my father-in-law yesterday. I said, hey, Dad, my goal is not to sell you this water pack. My goal is to cause you to educate yourself so you understand the value of it and take advantage of it. Because, I mean, who wants to drink tap water? And he lives in Texas. Who wants to drink bottled water? So, and I said that up front. But again, inside my mind, I do have an intention on generating income because I know what our family will benefit. So that phone conversation, when I see him in July, he is a bona fide customer, even though he's my father-in-law. So again, it goes back to that intent. And regardless of the business, we are a business owner. And we have to treat it. It's not about work, it's about playing. That's again, it's a mindset shift. And when we do that, and this stuff, some of us would go, oh, I don't know about that. And you know, documenting everything. It really can be fun and it can be liberating. So, Steve Crowfoot has recorded. Go ahead, Ron.
I say Neekin's a fun business. And, you know, it's great. It's one where you can help people and you educate them and you can earn money doing it. And, this isn't about trying to push anything on anybody. You're educating and sharing. And you hope that they understand, but we know we have things that people need that will help them, and particularly at a time when there's the health concern that there is with the coronavirus. My gosh, Neekin can have such a positive influence on them with all the nutritionals. So, I don't know, it's just a great business and a great business model, but all we can do is share and educate and go from there.
That's all we can do. So thanks again, Ron Barnes, professional CPA and our very own Neekin top 10 reasons why a home-based business guru. It was in the house, so that's it.
To learn more about Neekin, we encourage you to contact the person who suggested you listen to this information.